What's going on, everyone? Jeremy here from The Quartering. And if there's one way to ensure that nobody's going to go out of their way to see your film or purchase your music or invest in your comic book or consume your product, it would be to attack them. I don't think there's any worse way to turn off a fandom than to belittle them and insult them, which is exactly what the main actress, Daniela Panetta, from Cowboy Bebop just did in what is assuredly a massive mistake. She released a video deriding fans and reducing, you know, all criticism of the casting to basically calling men creeps. I'm going to show you this video too, because it really is rage inducing. And here's the thing, you know, I see a lot of people pushing back about this on Twitter saying, oh, it's just because the woman did it. Well, look, there were a lot of criticisms for other actors, a part of the cast, including one being far too old for that. But that actor didn't release a video complaining about it and complaining about the fans, did they? Daniela Panetta did, and that's what I'm talking about. If a male actor from this cast wants to release a similar video deriding the fans, I will make this video again and be happy to do it, because these people don't deserve your money. They don't like you. They don't care about you. They think you're gross. They think your stupid anime is dumb, and they're happy to get a paycheck for it, but they don't really care about it. These shows are not made for you. These shows are not made for fans of Cowboy Bebop. These shows are made for normies. And as someone put on Twitter last night expertly, those same normies that used to make fun of you and bully you for liking the stuff 10 years ago. That's who's not only working on these shows, but that's who these shows are made for. You have Cowboy Bebop actress Daniela Panetta appears to deride fans criticizing Netflix live action Faye Valentine. Again, we have this, it's just like Rose Tico all over again. Are there fans that are outwardly saying like, oh my God, her bobs are too small. She's not as busty that she should be. Show is ruined. Yeah, I'm sure there's a couple. But the overwhelming criticism is in her terrible outfit, her bland color, and the idea that, you know, there's so much more they could have done to make her proud. I mean, her attractiveness is a weapon basically in her arsenal. And instead they just turned her into another like run-of-the-mill purple-haired SJW. I mean, I'll just prove it here. The new move by Panetta appears to be the latest marketing stunt from Netflix in an attempt to get people interested in the show. Panetta posted an update on her Instagram story called Fan Apology. The video has subsequently been uploaded to YouTube by user I don't know, although the below video does not include the ending. In the video, Panetta begins by saying, hey guys, as you know, Cowboy Bebop first look dropped today, which was so exciting, and I just want to address a couple things that keep coming up amongst the fans. She then proceeded to sarcastically deride fans for first saying, first, I wanted to apologize to the fans that I did not anatomically match the Faye Valentine character. 6 foot double D's with a 2-inch waist. You know, they looked everywhere for that woman and they couldn't find her. It was kind of weird. So they just went with my short A. I know. Am I right? I mean, the idea was never that people were like, oh my God, you don't look exactly like her. In fact, most of the criticism was in fact around the wardrobe. And then she whined about how, oh, I just couldn't do stunts in the wardrobe and I couldn't achieve that same look, when there are literal hundreds of examples of cosplayers doing it better. Here, how about this? I don't know if these are probably not, maybe they're all the same girl. I'm not sure. Looks like maybe more than one. I mean, here's a bunch of them that seem to have no problem looking exactly like the part. What do you mean there aren't people like this? It's absurd. And then you see, of course, here. She then claims, here's Data Racer. Daniela Panetta insulted Cowboy Bebop fans 3 days ago. Here's all the comments on her initial Instagram post from 4 days ago. They're all positive. SJWs will try to twist this and accuse male fans of harassing yet another female actress. As you can see, all positive. Let's go. Fire emojis. You know, yes, fam, this is so good. Where's all this criticism that you're getting? people didn't exactly care for the wardrobe, but you know, you didn't have to even comment on it. That's the thing. I get that you're allowed to have an opinion, but imagine a world where Hollywood actors would just shut the hell up and do what they're supposed to do. I mean, this post is dripping with hate. Look at this.
Hey guys, so as you know, our Cowboy Bebop first look dropped today, which was so exciting. And I just wanted to address a couple of things that...
You mean just one thing?
...sort of keep coming up in the comments amongst fans.
What comments? Your Instagram was completely devoid of any of this kind of criticism.
First, I wanted to apologize to the fans that I did not anatomically match the Faye Valentine character. 6 foot, double D size breast, 2 inch waist. You know, they looked everywhere for that woman and they couldn't find her.
I mean, could you be any more sarcastic and entitled? Why do they, I mean, they always hire these people. And, you know, usually they'll pretend that they've always been a fan. Oh, my God. Like Kevin Smith. Oh, I've always been a fan of He-Man. Just don't look into my past where I talk about how I was never a fan of He-Man. I really want to do right by the fans. And look, you know, I want to be clear here, too. People who would attack her personally for her physical attributes and looks, that's not okay. You know what? She was hired. If you have a problem with who is staffed or cast, it's not really her fault. It's the person that hired her, hypothetically. If that's what you're the most angry about, you know, she's not going to get plastic surgery to look more closely like that character. If you want to get really specific, isn't Faye from Singapore or something like that? And this person is from Mexico. So they're not even the right quote-unquote ethnicity. All right, correct. If you want to get that specific. And maybe there are a few Redditors who are that, you know, up in arms about the exact, you know, the exact race and body proportions. There probably was one or two people that would fit that, but that's neither here nor there. What you have is somebody who just hates the fans. Most people, if you look at the criticism, were like, oh, her outfit sucks. Can we get something that looks more close to what she actually wears in the comics or in the anime? That was it. It wasn't like about her chest being too small.
It's kind of weird. So they just went with my short ass.
Cut out that curse word.
Am I right? You know, there was talk about like, can we put Danielle in a time machine and maybe give her different parents so she has different genetic information to sort of make her look better? It proved to be too complicated.
I mean, what? I mean, she just seems like a crotch to me. Like, just because you get criticism doesn't mean you have to respond to it. You must look at like Henry Cavill's response to fandoms, you know, toxic fandoms. You're going to have people that, you know, are overly invested and will say something rude. I'm not denying that that happens, okay? But what you do with that is something completely in your control. And now you could just, you know, keep your head down and try to do the best job you could. Or you could record a sarcastic video, which now has 300,000 views on Twitter, and be a total crotch to the fans.
And the other thing I wanted to bring up was I want to apologize that the outfit I'm wearing is not exactly what...
Oh, yeah. Just could you roll your eyes any more sarcastically?
She wears in the anime. You know, we tried.
No, you didn't.
But do...
If you tried, you would have seen plenty of cosplayers that were able to do it.
Doing stunts in tissue paper, things disappear, they rip. Sometimes it just got...
Doing stunts. How many stunts are you doing, Daniela? I'd be willing to bet there's at least a reasonable chance you have a stunt double on top of that. How much high action are you really participating in the show? Maybe they could have two different setups. When you're doing action, you could be wearing a different outfit or one that's slightly modified. I mean, her entire video is just gaslighting. She's acting like all the criticism is entirely because she doesn't have the same outfit as they do in the comics, which isn't true.
Anyway, like I was saying, that original costume, they made a couple of them, but like I said, they got sort of slurped up in my various crevices, never to be retrieved again. So we needed to really build something that could...
Build something? girl, you're wearing a totally normal vest and a jean skirt. You're wearing a yellow cloth zipper up and a coat. This isn't a costume. This is regular clothes you could get at the Gap. Like, are you joking right now?
Withstand the test of time. So, just, you know.
And of course, you see, you know, 1,400 quote tweets, probably a good amount of them being like, you know, from leftists, like, yeah, girl, tell him. Also, on what planet is this dumping on fans? Yeah, so leftist Twitter is, she's dumping on you losers that only care about looks. This is who Netflix is making the show for. Is she, like, being over-the-top disrespectful? No. But she's being a crotch. And these, like, leftoids that think this is awesome, shitting on fans, like, that's who Netflix is making the show for. So remember, when that bill comes next month, remember. Oh, Jack Saint in here. All these guys got in trouble or got negged by a girl once and never been able to recover emotionally. I don't really know what that word means, but I've been happily married for 13 years. So sorry, Jack Saint. I'm sure when you're, again, let's make this about, you know, owning the rightoids, or owning gamer bros, instead of this actress, you know, could have completely ignored. Could have just completely ignored it. But, nah, gotta make your big stand movement. And hopefully these losers who think this is stunning and brave, tune in, because I know I won't be. Hope you enjoyed this video. We'll talk to you again real soon. It looks like Disney and Marvel are quite scared, as the appetite for big budget cape films in a post-lockdown world seems roughly a third of what it was before. I think it's important to keep in mind that Phase 4, when we saw it announced, everyone basically knew it was going to be disaster. I mean, sure, there were things like Thor, Love and Thunder, which, you know, will probably do decent. Doctor Strange, decent. These are things before the new kind of box office high watermark came out. Now we saw Disney roll the dice a couple of times with full theatrical releases. And they've been, by Disney's own standards, disastrous. Black Widow will likely just break even after basically 2 years of hype. And Shang-Chi, while it might be a fine movie, it literally might be. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody cares about it. And even less so will be The Eternals. And after seeing the box office basically disastrous, the box office's disastrous performances in post-lockdown, Disney's lost their will. They're deciding to basically delay more Marvel movies, and it's pretty interesting. By the way, it's Friday. I want to remind you that if you're still browsing the internet without a VPN, make today the day you get protected. The VPN I use is Private Internet Access. They've been a very important supporter of the channel for several months now, and they've got an amazing discount that I think ends in just a few days. It's a massive discount if you use the link I leave in the pinned comment below. So if you still haven't picked up a VPN, it's like a couple of bucks. Get one today. Use the link in the description. Support the channel. Protect yourself. Browse anonymously. Access region-locked content. Protect your data from being sold and resold by big tech. Just all wins across the board. Kevin Feige's woke Phase 4 approach is turning out to be a disaster of epic proportions, as it's now being reported that if Shang-Chi tanks at the box office, which it is expected to, that Disney will delay the release of Eternals. This info comes from Vulture's report about how Sony is going to further delay the release of Venom 2, where the site reached out for two additional studio sources to see if there would be similar delays, where it's noted that Marvel could delay the release of Eternals if Shang-Chi underperforms, which follows Black Widow being a colossal catastrophe. I don't know if I would call it a catastrophe, but in a world where Captain Marvel made $1 billion, having Black Widow, a far better known character, and Scarlett Johansson, a far better liked actress, her film make half, less than half of what Captain Marvel did, I'm sure that was a high pucker factor for a lot of the executives at Disney. I think that what happened was they were riding such an incredible high. The tide was so high that all boats were being raised. I mean, a movie like Aquaman made $1 billion. Aquaman, okay? Wonder Woman, $1 billion movie practically. Now, the world's over it. The world is over Cape Films, and I don't think it can actually be recovered. I don't think they could turn back from this. I mean, what they're going to have to do probably is lower budgets, because I just think not just American, but really the worldwide appetite for these films is less than half of what it was, according to box office numbers, less than half. And China seems to be in a period of where they're just freezing Marvel out, freezing Disney out. Nothing's getting Chinese releases now. I know they have their like 100-year centennial thing. They only want to release super propagandistic movies over there. But I mean, without that sweet $300 million from China, Marvel's entire Phase 4 collapses. We already know that China hates the Eternals. They call the actors ugly. And, or not the Eternals, Shang-Chi. And then they didn't like Mulan, and they're not going to like the Eternals. Among studios, sources reached by Vulture, the short-term outlook is that Autumn's big films, such as Dune and Top Gun Maverick, that's a big film, will most likely stay on the schedule release dates. Although Marvel Studios' Eternals could be delayed if the 24th MCU entry, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, underperforms at the box office upon its September 3rd release. This is all but assured. And look at the rest of Phase 4. Another Ant-Man movie that won't even be about Ant-Man. Doctor Strange, which I was, even myself, you know, I'm like, I still like Doctor Strange. Even I'm kind of like not that pumped about it. Recent estimates have Shang-Chi opening at the box office at the lowest debut of any MCU movie, including lower than Ant-Man's $57 million and The Incredible Hulk's $55 million, with a range of $35 to $55 million. If this movie does $40 million, $45 million, it's going to be a catastrophe. Now, the box office or the budget for Shang-Chi is obviously much less than your typical Avengers film, but it's like Disney thought, hey, Marvel thought, you know what? No matter what we do, we're making $1 billion, so let's just pump out a bunch of let's focus more on diversity of the MCU than, you know, what got us here, which was making good movies. Now, Black Widow as a movie had some cringe moments, but I would say it was a very middle-of-the-road Marvel movie. Not bad, I don't think. Not great, but you could say that about, I don't know, 20 of the Marvel movies. So the idea that it wasn't Infinity War or it wasn't Endgame, Winter Soldier or something like that, it's fine. They're not all amazing. But when you're going to have a mediocre movie plus an actor nobody knows, well, some people know, but it doesn't have the draws, obviously, like Chris Evans or Chris Hemsworth. And then you have a IP that hardly anybody knows about. I think that people are going to see Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings on the billboard at movie theaters and have no idea it's a Marvel movie. I really do believe that. Understand that you're watching this channel, so you know it's a Marvel movie. And you know, even that The Eternals are a Marvel movie. But John Q. Public, which will account for probably 75% of Marvel movies' revenue, they don't know. They don't know who the hell Shang-Chi is. They don't know The Eternals. You mean The Eternals that stood by and did nothing while Thanos snapped away half the universe? I'm supposed to believe that The Eternals, these super all-powerful beings, just ignored Thanos. Yeah, I'm sure. It should be noted that obviously Disney was aware Black Widow was going to tank big time, which is why they released it right away on Disney Plus, as Disney makes a lot more money in Disney Plus. We know that they made like $60 million opening weekend on Disney Premier. I'm guessing when the final numbers come out, they'll probably have $100 million from Disney Plus between new signups and people that paid the $30. So, you know, that helps obviously a lot. It also seems obvious that Disney thinks Shang-Chi will tank, which is why the 45-day theatrical release is considered, quote, an experiment. And Disney apparently thinks the upcoming November release of Eternals will fail as well, hence the release date change. When the movie stars are suing or feuding with the studio or siding with one another against the studio, Elizabeth Olsen, that shows you just how bad things are. Feige's woke approach, this is via Cosmic Book News, by the way, doesn't look like it's getting any better as upcoming releases include a slate of woke content, which is where characters are changed for the sake of political correctness or have a liberal agenda. Shang-Chi recently said the film will change the world and will finally give the audience an aspirational Asian character. Yeah, Jackie Chan didn't exist. Eternals, gender-bent, race-swapped characters. Regarding the story, the trailer revealed that although the entire universe was threatened by Thanos, they decided to stay out of it. Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner, replaced by Hailee Steinfeld's Kate Bishop. Again, not all of these are things that didn't happen in the comic books. There's comic book lore to support almost all of this, except for like the gender and race swapping. Miss Marvel, politically oppressed Muslim character that replaced Carol Danvers in comics. That's going to be bad too. Doctor Strange, I think, is fine. Thor, Love and Thunder will be fine. Thor stands on its own. Now, Natalie Portman going to be, you know, the new Thompson. So like, or Jane Foster, sorry. And Valkyrie is the new queen of Asgard, effectively putting Thor in behind two women, which is perfect. That's exactly what Disney wants. Taika Waititi, of course, directing that. So it's going to be, you know, as much as I dislike him, his movies are generally pretty funny. Jojo Rabbit, I thought was excellent. The work he's done on What We Do in the Shadows, I thought is really funny. Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever. I mean, I don't know. I can't blame Disney for doing what they do there. I mean, you know, it is what it is. Captain Marvel 2, I mean, The Marvels. The Marvels will feature Brie Larson, Tiona Paris, and Monica Rambeau, and Iman Vellani as Miss Marvel. The director recently said the movie is about pain and trauma. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, unknown how woke James Gunn will go, but he may feature a woke version. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Cosmic Book News does tend to kind of, you know, hype. It's like another level higher than Bounding into Comics in terms of, you know, maybe going a little too far. Deadpool 3, I think, fine. Ryan Reynolds sold out his writers for two female noobs, as demanded by Feige and Marvel. I remember that. Blade, going to be awful. Captain America 4, replaced by Anthony Mackie's Falcon. No superpowers. Moon Knight, you know, She-Hulk. This is what Marvel has for the next 3 years. You're out of ideas. You remake things. You reboot them. This is exactly what we see in the film industry right now. They're completely devoid of ideas. And all they can do is grasp at straws from past successes and do so terribly. Now we're getting to that era in video games too, where Blizzard is releasing nonstop remasters and reboots of their Diablo games and things like that. And we've got Saints Row getting a woke reboot. Now look, Saints Row has always been a kind of wacky and it's definitely had its kind of, woke-ish stuff to it. I'm not going to pretend like this was Doom and then suddenly it became, you know, a gender studies video game. But just to give you an example of like a sneak peek, you could see, here's a sneak peek of what the gaming media outrage cycle will be when Saints Row releases. Saints Row gets a gritty reboot in the Weird West, but developers promise its irreverent tone will remain. One of the questions raised at the roundtable with the game's developers was that of cultural appropriation. The six people made available for interview were all middle-aged white men, creating a game set in a region where a significant proportion of the population is Latinx or Hispanic. Whoever wrote this, again, it's proven time and time again by literally every one of my Latin viewers that I talk to on Twitter or by people, strangers. Nobody wants to be called Latinx. Nobody. Except, again, I've talked about this before. All these really are woke, like rich white liberals arguing over what nickname they can give to brown people. That's what it really is. They're purse puppies. You know, like, Won't anybody think of the Browns as they sip their pumpkin spice latte? Meanwhile, they're, you know, the same people are just out there getting their grind on and working and trying to get ahead out there. They don't really need some, you know, upper middle class white lady with a sweater vest worried about what they are doing. But you get, see, you saw the original trailer. It's 22,000 downvotes to 16,000. Nobody likes it. Now, these games are, you know, a bit older. There's definitely some cringe voice acting, like, get away from my friends. And, of course, you get the haircut. Why does every, like, look at that. Is that what, like, every the haircut? You just know what's coming when you see the haircut. Which is why it's depressing to see gothics have this haircut. I mean, it looks good on her, but she's like the one person on the planet who, you know, you're not like, oh, okay, I see the haircut. I already know what I'm in for. And you see Saints Row continuing to double down. They're getting angry. I'm very confused as to, you know, what they exactly think here, but they sure are definitely not acting angry. We've created a set of characters that you're going to want to invite in your living room every day. Rebooting. Nobody likes these. I mean, it's just cringe. And then you go, where's this? Saints Row Reboot. Saints Row Reboot faces backlash. Volition won't back down and doesn't want the tone of past games. Volition has been dealing with the backlash of the reveal of Saints Row Reboot, including not having the tone of past games and not backing down. As previously reported, by the way, this is via Niche Gamer. Players from the old, their own criminal empire from the scratch of Santo Lesso, taking on other gangs to become self-made, take down Los Panteros, the Idols, the Marshal, in their quest to take over the city. The new trailer was shared today detailing Santo Lesso, the new Saints gangs, and some of the things the players can do therein. You can find that below. Reception of the game has been polarizing, especially the main characters. Criticisms have been levied on social media include how the characters look too young and akin to the characters from a mainstream TV show or a Disney Channel teens. Others compared it to tween Grand Theft Auto or four LGBT woke liberals, arts college students majoring in art and English. Soon after the trailer's debut, the game's official Twitter clarified that players could create their own character. Nonetheless, the official trailer is currently sitting at a like-to-dislike ratio of 16,000 to 21,000. Some comments also object to the characters looking like woke hipsters and preferring the older games. The first two Saints Row games were somewhat realistic, with street gang looking to build a full-blown empire through some outrageous quests. Saints Row the Third was where things became more surreal. The Saints had become so influential that they sold merchandising and they took photos with fans during bank robberies, and some themes on if corporations had gone too far. Nonetheless, it features surreal quests such as a game show, ragdolling into traffic, blah, 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 blah. The fourth game took it even further when the main characters became the president of the United States, fighting aliens in virtual reality using superpowers. As such, there were concerns a reboot would not feature a believable criminal main cast that the first two games or become as wild and weird as the last two. This may explain why Chief Creative Officer and Studio Development Director Jim Boone insisted that the game feature of a new city and characters, it would still feature that criminality and over-the-top tone we're known for. The game's Twitter has been pleading with fans that there's more to show and to have faith that the game is only in the early days for the new Saints. They also rebuffed those claiming the default boss being a black woman was purely a token gesture. Even so, let's see this. What criminality? Those kids are the hard-earned, good-blooded kill. Like everyone, it's an origin story. Nobody likes it. Even so, the account has deemed some of those dissatisfied with the game as haters. They replied. Gavinators highlighted how the game would not get as many complaints if they, quote, replace these clowns and give us real Saints. Doesn't even have to be the old crew, just real gangsters. The account replied with a gif, haters gonna hate. Unironically, featuring gameplay from Saints Row the Third. So way to effing go, Gavinator replied. Looks like y'all hate on the people who bought your game, made it successful, and made you possible for the series to continue. Also, didn't you guys go a while ago bankrupt? If you didn't want that to happen again, I'd suggest responding to criticism differently. Now, this is the part where Kotaku and Polygon will call this entitled. I've never really accepted that definition. I feel like if I'm giving you my money, I am entitled to certain things. Now, that doesn't mean I get to be hateful or, you know, insult your looks or get personal with things. But I certainly can tell you that it looks like garbage and that, you know, I don't want to buy it. That's not being entitled. And I suppose in a pejorative manner, I mean, you are entitled to give your feedback when they are there to serve you. The game will support two-player co-op with drop-in drop-out support. Players buy up vacant lots across the city's 9 districts, creating fronts. However, what has annoyed fans is the game seemingly loses the humor and elements that would be considered offensive to some. As PC gamers note, past games have had, quote, moments of casual sexism and homophobia within its main cast and beyond. Boone explains how the tone of past games do not want to do. We love the old Saints Row games, but we also recognize these games, those are games of a time. They made sense within that era, and we were able to do things that felt good back then. But the tone is not something we feel like we want to do today. We've had a different kind of story we want to tell, meaning we want to get woke. And like, their official Twitter account, I mean, just pleading, begging with fans, will persuade you. You know, I don't believe it. I don't think that this is a good look. Now, again, I'll live without playing another reboot game, but the comments on this just are obviously not good. You know, I wonder how many times the word BA was thrown around in the pitch meeting. The aliens of Saints Row 4 don't seem so bad after seeing this. This isn't Saints Row. This is hipsters versus gangsters, the game. Saints Row went from Hector says Buenos Noches to get the F out of the way from my friends. The villain gang looks more like Saints than the actual Saints. This is the Steve Buscemi fellow kids meme, but stretched into 4 minutes. It's like they took these like four. I was told Saints Row is getting a reboot. This looks like less like a reboot and more like them trying to merge Saints Row the Third and Agents of Mayhem together. This is trailer is an insult. Hey, nerds, look at these Californian hipster college kids so you can relate. We know you're nerds, the devs. Saints Row Woke Hipster Edition. I don't really know at what point people just decided that hipsters are gangsta. It's because everyone that makes this game looks like this. And this is a classic self-insert. All I can say is they can make the game they want to make and maybe it'll be good. But I don't recommend arguing with the fans. I don't think that's a good idea. But hey, what do I know? I'm only a customer. Woke horror films is a thing that only 2020 to 2021 would bring you. And I think I know exactly why. Look, if you've been a fan of this channel, you know I'm a big fan of horror films. In fact, I just happen to have Friday the 13th on NES sitting here from stream last night. But look, the reviews for horror films are always bad. Every time you see, I even like the kind of the new series, why can't I think of the name of it? They're all in the Conjuring type series. I know they're not amazing, but like as such a fan of horror films, it's really difficult. You kind of got to take what you get, and it's not always great. In fact, it's bad more often than not. There are some good classics out there. I'm still a big fan of kind of the Poltergeist era, the 80s kind of horror films, early 90s. These are probably, to me, as good as they'll ever get. But every once in a while, I think there's a good horror film put out there. And I think nowadays, though, because of award season, because of the artificial importance placed on reviews, they started to kind of go down this woke horror kind of trend. And it's not really limited to just Jordan Peele. there's many kind of woke horror comedies or woke horror films. You could see from News Daily, this the rise of woke horror. The scary good filmmakers leading the rise of woke horror. No thanks. I mean, a woke movie in and of itself is scary enough. People want to actually relax and be entertained. They don't want to be preached at. And it always comes off as totally inorganic. I felt like Get Out was pretty on the nose, but it was kind of still a decent movie. You know, but it's rare that people can go into a movie and say, I want to talk about this political issue, but through the lens of a horror film. You saw that with the, remember the liberals hunting conservatives, whatever movie that was, got politicized heavily. And the movie itself really wasn't like quite as bad as people thought it would be. But you had obviously Get Out being kind of that first kind of woke. But then you get all these films, they're talking about it and they're all terrible and you never heard of them. You get, you know, Jordan Peele's BLM parable, Get Out. You have Thelma, you have Raw. Raw was actually a weird, I think that was where you were eating raw meat. I saw that. I know I saw that. It wasn't good. The Bad Batch, Revenge, The Cured. Have you even heard of any of these? No. Heredity was not good, but actually it was okay. Okay. But again, that's on the modern day level of horror films where they're all just terrible. Rift. Nobody wants woke horror films except for directors. And you got a guy like Jordan Peele who said, you know, I don't want to hire any white people kind of thing. And everybody in media applauded it and said it was so stunning and brave to be racist. And that's cool. You know, Jordan Peele can do that because that's what is acceptable. In fact, lauded in modern day. I understand the narrative about, you know, not getting a lot of opportunities, and Jordan Peele is welcome to hire whomever he wishes for his film. I just don't think the way to overcome, you know, racism is with more of it. I'm just a simple Midwestern guy. I don't really have to deal with the things that probably Jordan Peele had to deal with growing up. But now Candyman, now if you look at the original Candyman, there were some kind of tropes about gentrification, hints of it. But I was in general kind of interested in seeing this movie. One, because I love horror and I watch almost every mainstream horror film that comes out, even no matter how bad it is. And two, because the director's Nita Costa, and she is the upcoming director for the new Captain Marvel movie. And I wanted to see just if this person was worthy of the role they received. So now we got Candyman gets an update, and the horror is gentrification. Whoa, I can't wait to pay $15 to go to a cinema and watch this. Who can take a sunrise and sprinkle it with dread? All seems well in the initial moments of Candyman, the modern day remake of the 92 classic horror classic, which opens with the sweet sounds of Sammy Davis Jr.'s classic, The Candyman. But then the song and film itself slowly become a spooky nightmare. We love doing stuff like that. The producer and Candyman co-writer, when Rosenfeld told The Post, twisting an otherwise innocent pop song that has become a signature of this production company, Monkey Paw, which he runs with Jordan Peele. The team did the same kind of creepy mix of Lanez's I Got Five on it in the trailer for the company's breakout hit, Get Out. The team's new Candyman is decidedly a contemporary tale, referred to by filmmakers as a spiritual sequel to the original. Actor Tony Todd returns to play Candyman himself, which I think is actually really cool. And that was one of the coolest parts about it, because I mean that film's 30 years old and he's still coming back. It features a diverse cast, oh thank God, including black leads and a gay couple. Wow, take my money. And deals with the issues of class and gentrification in a real-life neighborhood of Chicago's Cabrini Green. Wow, I literally can't wait. After the most recent film in the franchise, 99's Candyman Day of the Dead, God, that was bad, bombed at the box office, holds a 10% fresh rating at Rotten Tomatoes, Peele resurrected the series, backed by his proven horror track record, including box office success, Get Out and Us. I don't call that a proven horror record. Get Out was good, Us was not. So he's shooting 50%. And if you want to throw in what he did to the Twilight Zone, he's shooting 1 for 3, 33%. So no, it's not a proven record. We like to play with stories that are mythical and magical, but grounded in a way, or in a grounded way, said Rosenfield, noting that the themes in Candyman were ripe for him and peeled to mine. With the 92 original was loosely based around the idea of gentrification, if you stretched, sure. Around the Cabrini Green area, Chicago's most notorious projects, since torn down, the new version, directed by New York City native Nia DaCosta, intimately explores the idea of the transformation of a Chicago neighborhood through the eyes of its conflicted main character, Anthony McCoy, a visual artist who was formerly a resident of the projects. McCoy played the Emmy Award-winning Watchmen breakout star, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, is a conflicted soul, now living in a swank loft built where the Cabrini Green projects once stood. He haplessly summons Candyman while mining for artistic inspiration. I mean, okay. I think most movies oversimplify the idea of gentrification, Cooper said, who grew up in a Soho and Red Hook, told the Post. Adding layers to the complexity of the popularity of the social justice movement in the last 2 years, a prescient topic at the film was originally set to be released in what would have been the midst of the peaceful protest last summer. It's uncanny that this film that Nia DaCosta crafted, which speaks to the unending cycle of bad behavior in American against black bodies, was being mirrored in reality. You know that. Okay, do you know who's doing that? I don't want to get, you know, you want to, okay, I'm not going down that road. I'm relieved it's not being released at a moment of national inflammation. At least there's been a beat since then. I think I know why they do this stuff. And that's to get these articles written. Candyman gets an update and the horror is gentrification. On what planet would anyone want to pay to see this movie? Now, I think most normies, you know, like myself, in terms, you know, if it weren't for me having to cover the film industry, I wouldn't even know these articles existed, and I might enjoy the movie in a different way. In a lot of ways, covering this stuff, immersing ourselves in this kind of news does rob us a little bit of any preconceived notions before going into the film. There's absolutely a way you can cover gentrification and this type of things that it doesn't feel ham-fisted and kind of crowbarred into the film. I don't have really any faith whatsoever that Jordan Peele will be able to do this. The whole social justice underlyings in Get Out were about as obvious as a hammer to the face. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know. I think that we live in a different era from a cinema standpoint. I'm almost certain that this movie won't make $250 million, but I could be wrong. It's going to depend. You know, I haven't really seen, it's not like the film was marketed this way. Only now are a couple of these articles kind of peeking out. When did this was written today. But the idea that, you know, they're outwardly trying to make it social justice-y, good for you. But now I'm not going to pay to see it in the theater, and I'll just watch it using other means. And I'm sure that many people will also agree, because I'm not going to pay to watch CNN, or get preached at by my movies. Maybe some people do enjoy that. Seriously. Obviously, some people do, and more power to you. Hopefully, they buy two tickets, because I'm not going. Blizzard is getting mocked again. Hey, look, I want to also say, I know a lot of people that work at Blizzard watch my videos, as evidenced by all the emails I get and comments I get from you. I want to be clear. I guarantee that 99.9% of the people, or 99% of the people that work at Blizzard, are really good people who just love video games and they're working what they felt like was their dream job. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think it's fair to, continue to, you know, talk about Blizzard employees. We're talking about what is a few bad apples here, it would appear, maybe a handful of bad apples. But there's a lot of people that work at Blizzard who are really dedicated and awesome people, and I'm sure that's lost in all this, and I don't want that to be. Blizzard has had a tough week in the stock market, obviously getting ridiculed through another week as it was found out that their HR department allegedly was shredding important documents in terms of their investigation. And now Blizzard to change beloved Overwatch hero's name in the wake of the suit. Now we have McCree here, which most people probably didn't even know that that was his name, but here we are. McCree, a popular hero in Blizzard's team-based Overwatch, is getting renamed. The playable character was originally a nod to Jesse McCree, a game designer who no longer works at Blizzard in the wake of the investigation. Activision Blizzard alleging widespread bad behavior. Further employees of Blizzard have told the Post that similar changes will be coming to World of Warcraft, which contains several characters and one city named after multiple Blizzard employees. The Overwatch development team posted a statement on Thursday on Twitter, saying, "As we continue to discuss how to best live up to our values and demonstrate our commitment to creating a game that world that reflects them, we believe it's necessary to change the name of a hero currently known as McCree to something that better represents what Overwatch stands for." Blizzard is not ready to announce a new character's name, but plans to incorporate the change into a narrative arc originally intended to appear in the game in September. That arc has now been delayed to accommodate and presumably justify the Cowboys' new call sign. Currently, another popular Blizzard game, World of Warcraft, still contains references to Jesse McCree in form, excuse me, of five character names and one city name. That's a lot of self-insert. However, multiple current employees who wish to remain anonymous out of fear of reprisal said Thursday that the nod to longtime level designer will be removed from the game soon as well. In addition, reference to two other former Blizzard employees, Diablo 4 director Luis Berga and World of Warcraft designer Jonathan LeCraft, will also be removed. A Blizzard spokesperson confirmed these changes. "We can confirm that those references in World of Warcraft will be removed," the spokesperson said. I gotta imagine that the policy going forward now will be that Blizzard does not allow self-inserts, because it seems like anybody in their leadership camp always ends up having a lot of dirty laundry, and it's a double embarrassment when they are stuck in the game still. These changes did not come out of nowhere. Commentators of Blizzard's Overwatch League have been deliberately avoiding saying McCree's name during matches in the wake of report from the video game website Kotaku that, also we already know. In today's statement, Overwatch team said that in the future it'll be more carefully considered how it chooses to roll real-life people into games. Exactly. I knew that was going to happen. But what's interesting is this is, of course, a nothing burger. I get it. It's performative. It's something. It doesn't really change anything. Can't wait for the next hour where we're found out more evidence that Activision is even worse than I could think. That literally happens when WoW did another terrible announcement, and now they're going to remove some names in prey that we forget all about that. You see here this meme, hold employees accountable, create safe work environment, hold accountants accountable, stop being mean to women, stepping over all that to get to rename McCree. I get it. Wow, Limo Dude was right all along. Who knew? Well, what does it say?
But Jesse McCree? Ah, that is a terrible name for a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Good reference. Zara was modded after an employee, right? Where does the real world end and this fiction begin? Am I even real? Is Overwatch on Earth? Am I on Earth? It's my birthday. Name McCree after me. Oh, Connor, I'm assuming you're probably a Minecraft YouTuber because you have, yeah. I don't know. Maybe not. Equality, are you insane? Still waiting for actual change. Most people, I regret to inform you that renaming a bunch of pixels won't undo any damage that happened IRL. There's some certain amount of this that people are not being reasonable. I think anything Overwatch does or Blizzard does right now will be soundly mocked, but they really have to kind of stay the course. Excuse me. They have to stay the course. They have to keep doing this. Because, you saw how quickly they removed the okay, they banned the okay hand symbol. I think they can, remove actual references to people who are terrible. But of course, that this has been mocked by everybody. Azoghal mocks Overwatch's decision on hero names after McCree drama. You know, he basically said, moving forward, in-game characters will no longer be renamed after real-life employees. Thank you, that was so smart. Yes, you should have never done that. It was dumb in the beginning. It was stupid, a stupid decision to solve another stupid decision. He continued, there's a tier list. Tier 1 is change the name and don't say anything. And I think just about as even as don't change the name. Just ignore it. Nobody thinks of this guy when they think of McCree. Whenever they think of McCree, they think of McCree because he's an actual character in the game that has a story. I don't give an S, to be honest. I think if they change the name or don't change the name, it doesn't really matter. The only thing I think really is cringe is changing the name and making a statement about it. Nobody's like, oh, wow, this is the name of a Blizzard guy that put his hands on people. Oh, man, nobody's doing that. Just let it disconnect itself. Very valuable point. I don't think that, you know, most people that play, I mean, this is evidenced by the top, look at this, okay? The top reply, or at least the one that shows for me on the top, says, someone explain what happened. This is, I mean, nobody even knows. This is probably like an average Overwatch player, and there's 800 likes of people that don't even know who McCree is or why they're renaming him. I mean, don't you think that that should tell you everything you need to know? Renaming McCree doesn't matter either way, although I don't feel like it's necessary. Statement gives a virtue signal vibe, though. One good thing to come out of this is the removal of in-game character names after dev and real people. Hurts immersion, seems narcissistic. It doesn't seem narcissistic, it is. Now, Overwatch did reveal extensive changes being made as a result of removing this name. I don't know. You know, they have more than just a name change, but none of this stuff really addresses the behavior that, you know, is going on in the office. We're not quite ready to reveal the details of how the change will be reflected in game, Andy remarked. What I can say is the change of the name is much beloved hero. It's going to be a significant undertaking and one that we're just approaching with consideration. I mean, I don't know. I think if they pay too much attention to it, if they pay too much attention to it and they make too big a deal about it, then all you're going to do is bring more light to who that person was really named after. It begs the question, though, does it even matter? Sure, it's a step in the right direction, but changing in-game content like WoW did too doesn't address the underlying issues. I'd like to start off by saying, recognizing that while I don't think the name adjustment is enough, changing McCree's name is a step in the right direction. While players across the globe may just associate the name with the character, the people who are on the receiving end of his bad behavior will forever see it as a reminder to the anguish. That's actually a good point. For those triggered by the name, this is the only thing that Blizzard could have done. Thankfully, McCree is a mystery man anyway, so switching his name could be easily woven into the fabric of the game's law. Was McCree an old Deadlock gang nickname that stuck, or was it superhero like Batman? There's a lot of other things. As much as McCree has come to symbolize Activision's Blizzard's transgressions, I question whether making a huge display about switching his name was the best idea. I agree. You should have just did it. Why not just be subtle? The likely answer is Blizzard wants to be seen doing something. It would like have been easy just to switch the name out during a lore arc without an online post and making a transition seem a little more natural and all part of the plan. By highlighting the change and causing so much outcry, McCree will always seem like McCree, only with a different name to placate fans' concerns. From now on, the character will always be haunted by the ghost of the person that inspired his original alias. Yeah. I mean, that's because Blizzard literally can't do anything right. I get it. I think you had to do it. But it's just like donating to charity, you know. I'll always give somebody more credit who donates to charity than somebody who donates and makes a big deal about it. But at the end of the day, you're still donating to charity and it's still good. I hope you enjoyed this video. We'll talk to you again real soon.